Welcome to Facilitating the Mission. We're very pleased to have Pastor Ed Taylor, lead pastor at Calvary Aurora, with us today. This is part two of our interview with Ed.
The way it stands now, Ed, with where you guys are at in ability to send and your ability to care for the people that God calls to go global, do you meet most of them personally? Do you know most of them personally prior to their departure, or are they mainly connected with JJ or other leaders within the church? And there's just too many of them for you to get to know personally.
No, there'll never be too many. I always know them personally. I want to serve them. I want to encourage them. You know, they're going to have my cell phone. They're going to have I think that they need us in their lives and me personally. And so I can't ever see a day where I won't know them personally on some way. I mean, and you know, if they're rising up through our church, I already know them because they're serving and we serve together. So, you know, we're going to be involved. I'm thinking of, we have 8 families now on the field organically from our church. And I mean, I know them all. I know their kids. I'm on WhatsApp with them. I'm reaching out to them, encouraging them. I'm going to know them. I need to know them. If we're going to lay hands on them, I need to know them.
That is amazing, brother. And I mean, I'm telling you, and you probably have heard this from them, but it's just, that's very unique, especially for the pastor of a church, you know, your size. We serve a couple of your folks, you know. In fact, we're going to try to get them on a podcast, Byron and Emily. Oh, yeah. and Deneen. And of course, Dave Gordon. And we're going to actually, I've gotten Deneen's approval to sort of put the video up on our website from when JJ interviewed her.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Unpack for me you clearly recognize that the body as a whole needs to have the missionaries that you guys have sent report in and update the body and so forth. Tell me how that came about and how, you know, where you've come to with that.
Well, I think that in the beginning, you know, because as missionaries increased, it was easier in the beginning to formulate that they need to tell their story because they're raising support. That, to me, I think, yes, it all started with helping them raise support. And mm-hmm. the greatest voice that would help them raise support would be mine. You know, I even found myself the other day, and I didn't mean to. It wasn't like I just said, hey, we had Bob and Kate, the couple. So some of our missionaries are in the States, some of them are, but they left our church and they're full time on the field, right? So their video was up on our March, you know, the month of March is a main emphasis for missions for us now. And so we want to fill our services weekend and our midweek with missionary stories, missionary videos. It's not a lot of time, so we give them a minute or so on Sundays just to get to the point. But then after they were done, I said, look, you saw Bob and Kate up there. They were sitting where you are, and they would never say this to you, but I'll tell you, they need money. And just a hard, direct look. I don't know what we're so afraid of. They need money. And if I had an amount, I would have told them. I would have said, they're about 10,000 short right now, and this church could come up with that in a heartbeat. And I didn't have to say that, but what happened was that as they kept coming back for furlough and they kept coming back, we just wanted people to hear their story. Like we never want them forgotten. And as we're praying for them by name, why not show them in person? And so that became, well, Wednesdays is when we're going to do it. And we used to have a video guy here. We don't have a video guy anymore, but hopefully we will. As we used to really, we'd give the interview, then we'd cut it, put it on our website, send out links. We need to start doing that again. But until then, we do as much as we can just to continue to cast these folks before them. If the brother is a gifted teacher, if he's a pastor teacher, then I'll give him the pulpit and I'll just take the pulpit and give us your testimony and weave it together with a Bible study and tell them about the bus breaking down. Tell them about the adoption you're going to do. You know, Byron and Emily, Byron just did that. And so I think it was just, hey, whenever anybody's coming back, I learned this from Pastor Chuck. I was going to look it up before the podcast, but I didn't get a chance. But one of the things they asked Pastor Chuck in his memoir before he left and went to heaven was, you know, what do you account for the success? And everybody's expecting him to say, well, because of my great study, my great prayer. But he says, I love his answer. And I must have picked this up years ago. And it's become a part of me. And that is, he said something like, you know, I just know that all I did was really say yes. created a culture of yes. That's what we've tried to do here. So if JJ called me right now, he says, hey, Ed, so-and-so's coming, and can we fit him in on Wednesday? Sure. And we'll figure it out. We'll, the answer is yes. And if they want, if we have a relationship with them and we support them and they want access to the church, the answer is yes. And we'll just figure out how to do it.
That is the biggest encouragement I think pastors need to hear, because the schedule drives the day's task rather than the stories of people making Jesus famous.
That's a good point, Brian, because this does create a, and so let's pull the curtain back a little bit. This does create a little frustration on a staff when things have to be moved and we make quick like that's one of the problems as a church grows, is that they lose their flexibility because they let the schedule and whatever drive there. But we have to remain open to the Spirit, and you also have to have good relationships with your team to help massage the difficulty of, yeah, but we just printed a bulletin, or but we don't have time. And hey, worship leader, cut a song. I'll cut 5 minutes out of my message and we'll give it to the missionary.
Yeah. Again, that's definitely out of the box, man.
Totally out of the box.
Well, it's an exciting way to live. I can tell you that. And I don't think we can. And so there's another thing, like we want to top ourselves. That's where March for Missions came in. That's when we started hanging flags in the sanctuary. That's when we started just putting things in our sanctuary and building things and putting pictures and devoting an entire wall, you know, letting our graphic guy create a wall and I know churches do that, but like we really push people there. We missionaries get prominence in the bulletin. We pray for them every week. We tell people to stop. I'll stop the service and say, look, get your phone out. It's probably already out anyway. Open up your email and send them an email right now. You know, we did this with Wayne Goranson. So Wayne was a missionary, I think, in Ecuador or one of the South American countries. And he had a terrible, terrible Jeep accident that landed him in the hospital. And he's not from our church. Most of our missionaries we've made relationally through another church, right? So, I think we support 40 or so right now. 8 of them are from our church. So the rest are somewhere else. We relationally, and like the Neasels we were talking about, they came to us through one of the vineyards here in town. But the ministry that with Wayne, we got word late that day. It was a Wednesday, I think, at staff meeting that we should pray for him. So that night at service, okay, guys, get your phone out. And I want you to email Wayne, and I just, whatever's on your heart for a guy that's in the hospital and could lose his leg, because that's where he's at. And so, you know, there's quite a few people in the sanctuary that night. They did what we asked them. So here's the thing. You don't even know what's going to happen. So the feedback from Wayne was, so we got the feedback that night or the next day. He says, Ed, I can't believe how faithful your church is, because I was so depressed and discouraged laying in my bed that night. And my phone just kept beeping one after another. Beep, beep. It was a notification of another email. I think 150 emails got sent to him that night. And, you know, Wayne's back now. He's pastoring in Colorado Springs, and we have a great relationship with him. But equipping for service includes modeling and telling people what and how to do it. And when we tell them, so we have a little email thing in our bulletin, but I always remind the folks, I know it's awkward and it's weird because you don't know them, but believe me, they are begging you. I may not use that word, but they're begging you to reach out to them and just ask them how you can pray for them. That's all you need to do. And they will answer you. And so that creates all kinds of organic things that God uses too.
I mean, where you're at, And what you're describing, I mean, again, I mean, you really are, in a sense, sort of a prototype that we like to point people to. And now I'm even more convinced of pointing people to look at what you're doing. But can you?
I'm sorry, but we just need to have the Pastor Ed Missions Conference.
Well, actually, that was a thought that I was having. But I was, but can you sort of put you on the spot here?
Yes.
Can you sort of articulate your view of the role of a local church in God's global, what God's doing globally, and sort of bringing about the Revelation 5 and 7. Can you sort of put a local church's role into that?
Yeah, I'm convinced that the local church is God's answer to the world's problems. And yes. that the local church, if you as you unpack the book of Acts, it was the local church in Jerusalem that God established his work as an extension of Jesus Christ. It was that local body of believers that God, I believe, intended to continue, no matter the size, you know. And I think guys get, they get a little frustrated when we start using words like large and small, and you got a large church, and it's different for me because I have a small church. And if I can just convince people that the difference is not what you may think it is, it's just a difference of proportion, or excuse me, of amount. It's not difference of proportion. So a church of 100 people might have two missionaries. A church of 2,000 might have 20 missionaries. But when you do the math, it's proportionally exactly the same. And so the church, like, we have to have a healthy church, because when you send a missionary out, they can't be a if they're not planning a church, they can't be a church unto themselves. So I look at, you know, like Byron and Emily is a good example. So Byron goes out, he wants to plant a church. And all they did was face opposition when they first went to Ukraine, because as soon as they got there, the war broke out. It was crazy. They went all over the place. And so he didn't really have a church. He wasn't pastoring a church. He didn't plant a church. And there, for a long season, he wasn't part of a church there. But we're his church. And so as a pastor, I have a responsibility to love their kids. They are kids. They were young when they're not so young anymore, but they were kids. And yes. So, to me, I view them like my kids. If that was my son on the mission field, which I think in some ways he is, I'm going to encourage him. I'm going to love him. I'm going to reach out to him. We're going to do our best to come up with ideas. You know, we've come up with a lot of ideas over the years to help missionaries. Some were really good. Some were really dumb. But you would never know unless you tried. And that's part of why we send teams, to encourage. Like, a whole purpose of the local church is to continue to be the church, no matter where your people are on the earth.
Yeah, I really like that. In fact, I don't know if you, did you ever know Pastor John Michaels?
I knew him briefly. Yes, I did.
So, you know, he had a pretty large church there in Vegas when I was pastoring a small church in San Diego after I got back from the field. And we did a missions conference in Hawaii one time, and, you know, we were speaking with the senior pastors that were at this conference. And of course, you know, John's got this huge missions budget and people all over the world. And so these guys were kind of like, you know, he kind of read their faces, and he basically said, "Hey guys, I know you're thinking, well, yeah, if I had a big church, I could do all that too." And he goes, "But I want you to listen to what, you know, Jeff has to say." And so then he had me just get up and start talking about what our church of 100 people, you know, was doing globally. And of course, in our own community too. And I just think that, you know, you again, you're very perceptive and sensitive to the reality that a lot of guys think that because their churches are small, they can't participate in what God's doing around the world. And so kind of dovetailing with what you said earlier about being intentional with church planting and stuff, when you send out church planters, how do you pass on to them that idea that, hey, you know, you're a church planter, but your church needs to be part of what God's doing globally too, from its infancy? Do you pass it on to them, or how do you do that?
Yeah, you know, now there is a distinct difference between sending out church planters and missionaries, because church planters have a different mindset, at least what we've seen in our church. And so, of the many church plants we've sent out, some of those guys have stayed in fellowship with us and some of them haven't. And so there's this hyper independence sometimes in church planters that they think that their vision is different than their sending church. And some guys do, you know, like, because I think my vision was a little different than my sending church, but I didn't seek to prove anything to my pastor. I just wanted to extend that. And so what we've done now recently, and we're doing things differently now in the last couple of years, is we've started a school of ministry. Mm-hmm. The first year we did it, I delegated it, and that was a mistake. Okay. I didn't have time. I think it's, for some people listening may already know this, but 6 years ago, my son passed away, and that rocked my world. I wasn't sure I was going to continue to pastor, and just lost a lot of passion, a lot of energy, a lot of everything. So I was just hanging on and delegating things. And And the brother did it a valiant attempt, but also made a lot of mistakes and actually was from outside of our church. So he didn't really even understand the culture of our church. And so we did it, made a mistake. I have a lot more strength now. So I did it myself. So I'm spending 52 weeks a year with 12 men and training them in ministry. We're still developing the curriculum as we go. And I've identified a man that's been saved in our church, discipled in our church. Now he's on staff in our church, and I'm going to hand it off to him. But I'm teaching it. And while we're developing and I'm teaching, it's very, very hands-on training. And the way that I try to incorporate my thinking to others is just to tell them straight up. Like, for example, on day one, I taught them the concept of not just like there's a problem. There's a door in the room that has a lock on both sides. If you don't have a key, you're not getting out. And that leads a lot of frustration to people, right? That's, I can't believe it. What kind of dumb church is this? They have a lock on this door and I don't have a key and they don't care about me. And I use that as I said, look, everything in this church has a reason why. So before you get mad at something, ask why. Ask somebody why. And that, to me, is training them to think deeper than just the problem. And then it's interesting how it manifests in people's lives, but that's how I try to convey. I want to teach them how I often get accused of thinking too much, and that is it's not an accusation. It's actually a fact. But that's how God made me. And so I'm always excited to see how the training looks and how someone else God made.
Yeah. And that's really navigating again with, you know, that ability or at least recognizing the value of asking a question. Why does that thing exist? Or I see this as one, I see this the way I do right now. Is there another way this can be perceived? And that's sort of at the root of, you know, cross-cultural missions, taking the gospel and making it understandable to people from other cultures and other languages. That how can this, is it possible to perceive this from another angle?
Yes.
So when you're doing that with these dozen guys for a year, is the intentionality there that some of them are going to go be church planters or missionaries, or what's the sort of criteria that puts them there?
My hope for the school ministry is to have a group of men that are trained to answer the call of whatever God has for them. And, I think that in our first school ministry, three of those guys are on our staff now. That wasn't the intent, but I think that if from staff, then that becomes another launching pad, because the culture here is if you come to me and say you want to plant a church, you come to me and say you want to go to the mission field, you're not immediately fired. Like, it's good. Let's talk about it.
That's nice to know too.
That is very nice to know. And again, very different.
Why create antagonism? Like, it's okay. And let's talk about it. And one of the things I tell them of a marker to look out for, because I'll see it, and they already know it, but I'll see it, and that's this. Because guys will say, well, when is it time to go? And I've come to the conclusion that the time to go is when you're thinking about the place you want to go more than you're thinking about here.
Yes.
And let's just make it happen. And, you know, if you want to plant a church, the last guy that we just sent out, it was about a year process. And he talked about it from a year ago. And hey, let's prepare you and get you to go. God will take care of his church here. We'll be fine. What we won't be fine if we have somebody on staff that doesn't want to be here or doesn't belong here. Like, you got to go. God told you to go. So let's go. And so what those guys will do, it's going to be this was an older group of guys. So I'm very excited. You know, there's a police officer in there. There is a couple of retired guys in there. And I hope they run with the vision that God's called them to do.
Mm. Yeah. Very good.
That's awesome.
Brian, you have any thoughts before we let Ed go?
I just wish I could sit and listen to Ed Free Associate for a long time. It's been a breath of fresh air, honestly, Ed, to hear you talk about how you do ministry, how you're open. I know you're in a growing church, and I know that God's given you an administrative mind, but the fact that you're open to allow people to today learn what God's doing today. We didn't know about this yesterday, but we found out today. And so you guys are going to find out today.
Right.
And guess what? you can go do this. Yes. You know, and it's like you, and nobody has to be, you know, you don't have to be special. You don't have to, you know, wait for, you know, some special something to happen to you. God has made you for ministry and you could be one of these people.
That's right.
I love hearing that.
And just because these types of things can't cover every angle, you know, there are heartaches behind these stories. There is backstabbing.
We had a guy in the hospital that was going to get his leg sawed off or something. I mean, hello. Well,
I mean more so from the pastor side, you know, because a lot of pastors are insecure about releasing, encouraging their, and for good reason, you know, you get hurt so many times, you want to get hurt again. So the revert is to control. It's to go conservative. You know, the last missionary we sent out just so jacked this up and ruined my reputation. And we're like, well, you know, that is painful, but I always remember the ratio. There was one Judas, but there were 11 others. You know, and I think that, something that's brand new, you know, cause I think that we haven't arrived in all this, and something that's brand new that we did last year as a test, and we're going to do one this year. Last year, I felt this burden to go visit a missionary without a team, because teams exhaust these guys. And
right.
And so I talked to JJ and I said, hey, JJ, are you open? You know, he owns a business. And I said, hey, can you get some time and let's go to Thailand. I want to see with myself and I want to check in on Dave and his marriage. I want to see his kids and I want to connect with Deneen. And he goes, oh, dude, let's do it. So he and I went out there for 8 or 9 days last year and it was a phenomenal trip. No team. We didn't have to worry about all the logistics of a team. We were just there to serve Dave, love on him, bring him some gifts that people sent to him, make sure his family's good, took us to his house. We play with his kids. We did some ministry with him. We did some ministry with Deneen. I mean, it was unbelievable. And it was a week and a half of our time. And then we came back and I said, JJ, that was a great trip. Yeah, it was a great trip. But I think it was too long. I think we were there too long because Dave felt like, okay, what mall are we going to go to today? And what do I need to do with Ed and JJ today? And I said, why don't we do one this year where we visit 3 missionaries? Are you up for it? And he said, yeah. And then one of the board members said, man, that's something I want to do. So this year we're going to attempt to do it, but we're going to go to Ukraine so we can give Byron and Emily a hug where they serve. Italy, Ireland, we're in Cork. We haven't figured out where we're going to go, but we're going to do these trips every year where the pastor shows up. And I learned this because of the conferences that God's been inviting me to, whether it was Austria or teaching out with Bob in England or doing stuff with Brian over at Creation Fest and learning that without a team, as good as they are, a lot can get done. We can get to the root of a relationship. We can pour into a family. We can encourage a family. We can equip a family. We can buy them meals. We can do a lot of great stuff. And it reminded me, you know, Paul said that he went back encouraging the churches. And that's something we've added to our, to me personally, it takes a lot to make it happen, but I don't care. We'll do what we got to do. And I will go where God tells me to go.
You know, Ed, that is just, that's incredible. And I don't know if you know this or not, but that's what you just described with you and JJ going out and visiting Deneen and Dave, that's actually at the root of Shepherd Staff when I started it. Because when I went to the field in 87, I'm out of Pat Kenny's church. You know Pat?
I do know Pat, yes.
So I was Pat's assistant pastor. And so we were sent to church plant in Central Philippines in 87. And Pat had, you know, he'd learned a few things over the years. And so when we were out there, you know, twice during our 5.5 years, you know, he came to visit with one of the elders. And he just said, hey, Jeff, we're not bringing a team. Don't schedule anything. We're just going to come love on you and Helen and the kids for a couple of days. And what can we bring you? And I mean, it just so rocked my world. And when I talked to my other missionary friends that from other organizations that were in Cebu at the time, and they heard about my pastor and just, you know, an elder of my church coming out to do a pastoral care visit. And I didn't have to put anything together. It just, you know, it totally was out of the ordinary. They'd never heard of anything like that. So when I got back and God had sort of laid the foundations of the vision for Shepherd Staff, a lot of it, you know, the idea that this entity facilitates local churches doing that, sending and caring for their own, that kind of care received from Pat and my home church is at the foundation of what Shepherd Staff is. And you're, in a sense, you're fleshing that yes. out. And your missionaries are reaping the benefit of it because, again, I talk to them somewhat regularly too. And so it's, yeah, very cool, man. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very healthy example.
Well, we really, more and more I'm learning that there are more years behind me than there are in front of me. And
yes.
I want to finish well, and I want to, it for the warfare these guys are going through and the conflict that they're going through, I know we can't do everything, but we've got to do something. And it's amazing that once you start doing something, people rise to the occasion. Because, you know, the discussion has been about me, but like the representation of hundreds of people that have joined this cause and have, they're the ones reaching out. They're the ones emailing. They're the ones. I mean, that lady came up to me. We didn't ask for this, but she started praying for the missionaries into a tape recorder, transcribing them, and then sending those prayers to our missionaries. She does that every week.
Wow.
And I couldn't do that, but God stirred her up to do that. And so collectively, like, I think that it's, again, the topic too is missionaries, but like, I want to give this kind of care to the people that are in my life. I think that
yes.
this is a lifestyle, and missionaries get to reap the benefit of that because, you know, they're in a distance, but like, you know, these guys pastoring on the, in the plains or in a mountain town, they need that same encouragement.
And it really is. And it's in your DNA, and you've put that DNA into the church, and it touches everything. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Ed, you said something that you want to do this with people in your life. And it sounds like from the way you're raising up disciples at your church, that missionaries are in your life.
They are. And I think that it's always good to remember where we came from. But one thing that truly encourages me on a personal level is that I know me, I know where I came from. I know the rebellious, resistant, sin-filled life that I lived before I was born again. I know I'm only growing in understanding how gracious God is to me. And I don't know where I learned this from, but, you know, especially when it comes to grief and sorrow and difficulty is one of the ways out of the pit. One of the practical ways out of the pit, instead of complaining, nobody's reaching out to me, nobody cares. One of the way out was to be what you want others to be to you. And that sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so somewhere along the way, I felt lonely and nobody was reaching out to me. And the Lord just said, Ed, that you don't need anybody to reach out to you. I've made you to reach out and encourage others. And a lot of neat friendships have been developed over the years through that.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.